Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Look, if his own former staff aren't supporting him, then why should you support him?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to communicate to those Republicans that you can still be a Republican or a conservative if you vote for a Democrat, that it's okay to cross that party line in this one election and just circle Kamala Harris. Because look, I have said that I've never voted for a Democrat in my life, but in this election, I'm willing to put policy aside and I'm prioritizing character and the Constitution.
Hey folks, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm Michael Steele. Ta-da. Guess what I got on? I got, for those of you who can't see me, I've got my vote t-shirt on. For those of you who can, yeah, it look good, right? It looks good. I'm excited about today because I get to have a conversation with two pioneers who are cutting a new path for young women out there, but also for Republicans. They're both Republicans, they're former Trump administration officials who are working for and casting their votes for Kamala Harris this November 5th. Sarah Matthews is a Republican communicator who served as the deputy press secretary for Donald Trump's administration from June of 2020 to January of 2021. Olivia Troy is an American national security official who worked in the office of the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, as the Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to the Vice President. We are joined for a little beauty shop conversation, which is really nice. It's really interesting to hear them talk in a very personal way about their journey to what they're doing now. And I'm looking forward to sharing all of that and a little fun with Sarah Matthews and Olivia Troy right here on the Michael Steele podcast on the Bulwark Network, coming up right after this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. It is so nice to have you all here. We are less than a week from y'all doing the voting thing. If you haven't been doing that voting thing already, which I hope you have, because if you listen to me, you better, because if you don't vote, stop listening. I don't care about you no more. You're dead to me. If you don't vote, you're dead to me. So this is how it is. So if y'all want to stay in the good graces, you want me to send you some muffins, then you better vote. This is how it works. They're not real muffins. Don't get excited. So anyway, Olivia's already like, muffins? Muffins? So
Wes, I was like, Michael makes muffins.
Well, I do, actually. I do make muffins. I make pretty good muffins. Although my Cinnabons are the joint. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a Christmas morning thing.
I feel like we've been missing out.
As Santa said, it says, if you've been good, you may see some show up at your doorstep at Christmas. So here we go.
We're in the beauty shop without your bones. offense. Let's think about that.
Yeah. See, Olivia, Olivia's been here before. She knows the routine.
I feel so
you got me in the beauty shop and you're not serving the buns? Are you kidding me? I want to welcome you guys. It is so much fun. It has been such a treat to work with you. And I've been spending a little bit more time with Olivia than Sarah. And Sarah's been really good to get to know you and to watch both of you really come into your own space in the face of a lot of ugliness. And I don't think people really fully appreciate what it takes to do what both of you have done over the past year and more to sort of tell the country that Houston, we have a problem. And, you know, we need to make sure we fix the problem. And the fixing of that problem is at the ballot box, but it's also raising awareness about who we are as a nation and what does that mean and the kind of leaders that we're electing and putting into power to govern us. And you both have been so clarifying on that. Talk a little bit before we get into some nitty gritty stuff about what that journey has been like for both of you as we are coming now to the final days of a very grueling campaign. The challenge of making the conscientious leap from party to country, and how that ride is going. Sarah, I'll start with you since you're new here to the beauty shop.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a very surreal journey. I think 4 years ago, if you would have told me that I'd be campaigning for Kamala Harris for president, I would have thought you were crazy. And so just to be in the position that I'm in, I wouldn't have guessed it myself. But I also didn't think that an insurrection at our nation's capital was possible. I didn't think we'd ever have a president who would disrupt the peaceful transfer of power. And so that kind of led me on this journey. That was my breaking point with the, with Trump, and was resigning on January 6th and then becoming an outspoken critic of his since then. And I see that what's at stake and why the risks are so high. And so it wasn't just enough for me to break with Trump and resign from the administration. I knew that I needed to use my voice in order to warn others of why he's unfit to be back in power, and that I needed to take that extra step and show Republicans that it's okay to identify as a conservative and cross that party line and vote for Kamala Harris in this election. So that way we can turn the page on Donald Trump.
That's an important point, though, because, you know, one of the key lines or phrases in what you just said is, as a conservative, I don't think people really appreciate the philosophical and ideological journey you've got to go through. I mean, you know, I've been a conservative a long time. I've been in this space a lot longer than both of you probably combined. So, because y'all strong, but you're young. Y'all been around, you know, I've been around the block for a hell of a long time, and it's been stupid. And trying to be a black conservative Republican in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s is crazy. But it's crazier today because there's so many other aspects that that drive that storyline, the ugliness, the difficulty of living and working around people who once were your allies in the battle have turned on you, and you're still a conservative. And Olivia, I know you and I've talked about this before. It, you know, is that isolation that you feel. So you make this journey, you make this leap in a way that you're hoping that your new partners in this, the Democrats, you know, kind of get it. You know, but you're still kind of caught in these two worlds, between these two worlds, trying to navigate all of this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's a great point about this journey and how it can feel very lonely at times. And look, I felt very lonely, especially at the start.
Oh,
I
I
felt like
know.
I
I,
was a
folks, let me
woman.
tell you, she's not
No, and Michael
lying.
knows. Yes, because
We
I was scared out of my
had
mind.
many a bourbon sessions we
Yes.
got.
Yeah. I was scared. There's so many things happening at once, and I just felt so lonely because I was like, okay, I am being called a traitor. I'm being called a traitor to my party. I'm being called a traitor to the country. I'm being called a traitor by my own colleagues. And it's like, where do I fit now? I started my career in politics. I started at the Republican National Committee. I used to do the coalitions with Latinos. Yeah. I mean, that was me. I was building coalitions at the RNC back in the day. And I was doing the outreach to Hispanic conservatives. And that was back in the day when they didn't call us all sorts of names and didn't label us in certain ways. And so, and then I found myself, I'm an intel officer. That's what I did after that. I became a career intel officer. After 9/11, and then it was like I don't really fit into that world either anymore because you're not supposed to be in front of the media. You're not supposed to be in the public eye. Last night I was at the rally, and I saw Peter Alexandre standing in front of me. First of all, and just to make you all laugh, I was trying not to fall off the risers, the media risers, because I'm not used to standing in a small space, and I'm holding this microphone and I'm looking at them, and the cameraman's just like, just don't step back. Just don't step back. And I looked at both of them and I said, you all do remember that I was a national security person sitting inside that building and no one was ever supposed to know my name. And now I'm sitting here on the Ellipse with thousands of people present right here. And it's just been kind of a interesting process to like just kind of navigate this through and figure out like, where do I fit in today? And I'm the one thing that has been inspiring and just gives me hope and has also just been heartwarming is just to see other colleagues like Sarah Matthews and stand by each other and all the women that have come forward. And I guess, watching this coalition grow of conservatives that are like saying, we don't want this anymore, we're taking a stand, is it gives me hope. And it's not as lonely as it was before. So Michael's no longer, having to do every day one-on-one therapy sessions with Olivia Troy because she's
Well, it, but it's look, I mean,
it's still hard.
I appreciate the lonelinesses. I don't think a lot of people do, and it is a true aspect of this. I can tell you what it was like in 2020 to make the conscious decision to speak out and to stand against my party for my country in the face of the threat that I saw that no one else was seeing. That because that's how you feel. You're sitting there going, okay, I can't be that stupid. I mean, I know I have crazy days where I kind of mix up things, but I know what I'm looking at right here. And this guy just is not, what am I missing? And then you have to, so that's the first part of it. And then you get to the point where you say, screw it. I'm going to go ahead and stand my ground, if you will. And you look around and you're like, okay, who's with me? And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm doing this by myself. And then the next thing you know, you're doing an op-ed or you're doing a video, and you're saying, words from the heart about how much you love your country, because that's really what it is. When I did the video for Joe Biden in 20, unlike where you guys are now, there was no effort that was generated. And that was one of the big criticisms that came out of that 2020 cycle, is that a lot of Republicans, not a lot, because there weren't a lot of us, those Republicans who did come out, there was no, further engagement with them. There wasn't even a thank you for that effort. And then that's in that moment you again realize, well, I didn't do that for the applause. I didn't do it for the thank yous. I didn't do it for an appointment. I didn't do it for any of that stuff. I did it because it was the right thing to do. And so it is good to see that, it's not just you two, but it's Kinzinger, it's a whole bunch of other folks that are also with you, sort of making that principled stand and saying something. And when General Kelly, with whom you both worked, came out, and it's interesting because you both represent two very interesting pieces in this storyline. Sarah, your communication. So as Olivia was saying, no one's supposed to know my name. Everybody knew your name, right? So you're a forward-facing individual. So in many respects, it's harder for you because you're someone that people, particularly the press, talk to every day, saw every day in various forms and varieties. And so your break is more pronounced in many respects because we've seen you, we've heard you, you've been out front as a deputy press secretary carrying the message. It makes a lot of sense. For Olivia, it's like, wait a minute, who turned the lights on? I'm in a dark room, baby. No, turn the lights out. No one knows I'm here. But then when General Kelly comes out, and it's interesting, one of the quotes from the article that Politico did that was I think it was McGraw, Meredith McGraw did, said the revelations General Kelly brought forward are disturbing and shocking, but because we know Trump and have worked for and alongside him, we were sadly not surprised by what General Kelly had to say. Was the General Kelly moment a, I guess I want to say, not gratifying, but confirming moment for you guys?
Yeah, it certainly was because I think, especially from my position, given that I think there were so many older, more senior people who could have come forward and spoken and warned about Donald Trump, but it seemed like a lot of the people who were coming forward were younger women. It was really frustrating for me for so long, for these last couple of years, where I'm wondering, okay, like, where are the men, though, who spent more time with Donald Trump, who saw him more frequently than I ever did, and know him to be as unfit as I do? And it was kind of a gratifying moment to see General Kelly come forward and do these interviews at a time when most Americans were tuning in, because that made his comments that much more impactful. And just given that he was Trump's longest serving chief of staff, he was handpicked by Trump for the role. He was recommended to be in Trump's administration by Senator Tom Cotton. I mean, this is a man, I mean, it list goes on, like four-star general, a gold star father, a man of complete integrity and honor, and a good person. And so I knew that his word, people would believe it. And not that I think that, people wouldn't believe my word or what have you, but I just think that someone like him coming forward, who spent arguably the most time with Trump compared to anyone else in the administration, and that is including the vice president. I mean, everyone on this call knows that it's the chief of staff who's almost like the vice president in many ways, because they're the ones actually kind of carrying out the day-to-day in the White House. And so I was really happy to see him come forward, and because there's strength in numbers, and for so long there's been such a small coalition of us, and so even just adding one more person in like that who is so senior and heard such damning things come out of Trump's mouth and tried to curb his worst instincts, it definitely was kind of reaffirming of, this is why I came forward, because I saw it too.
Olivia, how about for you? I mean, because, so Kelly's one of those guys who's in the shadows with you in many respects. And yeah, he was chief of staff, but a lot of that protocol, that aspect of his time as a general and working in the various roles that he has worked in, he still sort of had that, okay, I don't need to be out front. I'm not trying to make a scene here. So for someone like you, to Sarah's point, it also must have been this like, okay, yeah, now I feel and see this a little bit differently because I realize I'm not as alone as I thought.
It was I think it was important for him to come forward. I think it's very hard. Look, that's something I weighed when I walked around in this haze when I had just left the White House and resigned, and I was thinking through things. And it's very hard when you're in the intelligence community or in the military because you really truly serve in a nonpartisan way, and that is really ingrained in you that you just, you serve whoever is in the Oval Office, regardless of politics. And it's very hard to kind of break away from that and then re-enter the space. And so, because you don't, I think there's a lot of feeling, and I've talked to some of the other military leaders that served under Trump, and it's almost like they don't know if it's more harmful than good because it's engaging, or is it politicizing our community? Is it not? And so we walk this kind of complicated line here. I think honestly, when he went on record, I was like, oh my God, thank goodness, because I have been in the meetings with him. I was in the meetings at the Department of Homeland Security. I remember the travel ban when it hit. I remember all of us like trying to figure out how the hell do we navigate this thing? And then it was executive order after executive order that hit us hard, right? It was one right after the other. They did it on purpose. And so then, I'm at DHS, and then he goes to the White House, and I'm like, oh no, who are we going to get now? Like, how are we going to navigate this? And then I end up in the White House, right? And we're both in the White House now together. And so it was just confirmation of someone else at a senior level in the room, in the meetings that I was in, because I felt like I was out here screaming from the rooftops, and Sarah Matthews knows this, like saying, like, no, this is what he says. He lauds dictators. I didn't hear him talk about Hitler, but I heard him talk about Putin all the time, about how strong Putin is. And I mean, in admirable ways that Trump would talk about him,
Admiration,
or he'd talk about Maduro, right? And right, we're saying Libertad publicly about Venezuela, and internally he's like, oh, that's strong SOB. He just won't leave. And I could tell that Trump was like, this is awesome, right? And I'm just like, what is going on here? But it's, so it's hard for like sitting at the table with all these people who know. I mean, they witnessed all of this. And so it was just like, okay, thank you. Because I mean, and so it was great to see him break away from that. And like, I, in terms of how it's complicated for us to come forward, I just think that at some point, this moment is really critical for our country. And so I think if you're going to speak out, like this would be the time, right? I mean, we cannot continue to watch this guy continue to destroy our relationships internationally and really hurt us internally of our country. So
So
yes, I mean,
let's talk about
I'm fine.
that part of it, the speaking out part of it, because you both have not been shy since emerging from your respective spaces, and making clear that there's not just what you don't know about what happened during our time. It's what you need to know about the man who wants to be president again. And both of you have taken on leadership roles in sort of a couple of things. One, doing that. Two, making a direct approach to Republicans and women. And not just necessarily Republican women, but all women, but specifically trying to create an alignment on behalf of the Harris-Walz campaign for women. I know, Olivia, you and I were involved well over a year ago in conversations trying to create permission structures for Republicans, as then we were talking about Joe Biden as the nominee of the party, to sort of give Republicans like ourselves the permission, if you will, the sense of okay to do this. I know you never voted for a Democrat before. I know your grandmama's going to turn over in her grave, but that's all right. We'll send flowers. It's kind of it's like what. How do we make this easier for you? How has that gone for the work you're doing for the campaign? I see you both around. You've both been on my show on MSNBC The Weeknd, and we really appreciate leveling up your voices in that regard. How has that effort been for both of you? I know you're working with Liz Cheney, who seems to, not seems to be, is sort of the a central figure in this version of the permission structure. But how has that been going, and what's been the response that you found out there? Sarah, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I knew that it was important in this election for undecided voters, particularly disaffected Republicans like myself, who may have voted for Trump in the past, but were on the fence about supporting him again in 2024, to see voices like mine, like Olivia's, like Liz Cheney's, out there and saying, "Hey, look, I identify as a conservative, but this man does not align with my values that made me become a conservative." And particularly for mine and Olivia's case, we witnessed firsthand him be unfit. And so I think that there's a lot of power in that of, look, if his own former staff aren't supporting him, then why should you support him? And so that I think was a big part of it. But then trying to communicate to those Republicans that you can still be a Republican or a conservative if you vote for a Democrat, that it's okay to cross that party line in this one election and just circle Kamala Harris. Because look, I have said that I've never voted for a Democrat in my life, but in this election, I'm willing to put policy aside and I'm prioritizing character and the Constitution. And so that's been my pitch to those people, that we might not agree with her on everything, and that there will come a day where I will, if she becomes president, that I will probably criticize some of her policies. But today is not that day. We are on the same team because I believe her to be someone who will uphold the Constitution, someone of good character who our children can look up to. And you can't say the same for Donald Trump. And so I think that it does give permission to those Republicans to say, "Hey, it's time to turn the page on Donald Trump," when they see other Republican voices out there, particularly former staffers of Trump.
Olivia, just jump in.
Yeah, I think, I think one of the inspiring things, I've been traveling a lot across to a lot of the battleground states. And I've spent time on the ground. I've gone to, we've convened gatherings. We have also, I'll go out and do the canvassing with people. I'll visit, sometimes I'll pop into phone banks. And I think one of the things that's incredibly rewarding, I will say, as hard as it is to be in this space, is I had someone walk up to me in a forum in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Excuse me. I was with the Blue Wall of Governors. They were standing behind me. And I mean, here I am, like the red dot in front of them, right? And I
Barking.
mean,
Just barking
if
at
yeah,
him.
if you had told me that I would be standing in front of like Governor Shapiro, Governor Whitmer, Governor Mills, and Evers, like I would have been like, "What? When? What world? What planet would that be in? What century?" And there I am. And they were on the Blue Wall bus tour, and it was the last stop. And I, and obviously they're amazing governors, and Governor Shapiro has done an amazing job for Pennsylvania. They've, the rally, like the crowd, it was a big crowd for the forum. And I remember Governor Shapiro walking up to me and being like, "By the way, the fact that this many people came out here is a big deal, just so you know," because he, it was a state, right? And I, after it, I'm sitting over here, and the governors, they're rock stars, and I'm just kind of like hanging on over here, just, And I had some Republicans walk up to me, and this woman walked up, and she was like, "Hi, this is my first political event," and she said, "But I am, I figured if you and some of these other courageous people can do it, so can I." And she's like, "And I'm not going to be silent anymore." And she's like, "And I voted for him twice, but I feel like I'm just going to start to put the work in, and I'm going to start to talking to people." And that was rewarding and inspiring because I think there's something to be said about, again, the permission structure. And it's definitely making a difference, I think, because they're talking to each other. I think, going out there and connecting with these people, and they're also saying, okay, you know what? I'm gonna start to talk to my neighbors, and I'm feeling very lonely right now, but I'm not alone. And then they start to talk to each other. And I think that's been incredible, is just watching the movement organically grow when you're out there. And I do think it's making a difference. And I, yeah.
I love that. I love that story. I love the fact that both of you are the face of this in so many ways, as opposed to someone like myself, to be honest, as a former official in the party. Because my stress going back to when I was a county chairman has always been the elevation of people in my neighborhood who align with what I'm trying to do and giving them the platform. A lot of times, the party officials, the people with elected titles want to be the face, the front. And my experience has taught me that if I can get a Sarah Matthews to tell that story or an Olivia Troy to tell that story, I'd much rather have them do it because it's more believable, it's more heartfelt. So the fact that, what the governor said, trust me, this is amazing to have this many people out here. It really speaks to the connection that the effort the both of you, along with, Elizabeth Newman and so many others, is just, it really to me speaks to the heart of where this needs to go from the Republican side. And I'll get to in a moment what does tomorrow look like for the GOP, but I think right now I really want people to appreciate the value of having both of you where you are. I mean, I love Liz. That's my girl. I've worked with the Cheney family a long time. I got pictures of her and her dad and me when he came and helped me here in Maryland when I was running for the U.S. Senate when nobody wanted to touch a Republican. I was like, nah, bring him to Maryland. I'll have the vice president come into Maryland. I have the president come into Maryland in a very ugly time for Republicans in 2006. Was not afraid of being a Republican. I was very proud of both of them. And I know that's not politically correct to say, but I'm not a politically correct individual. So, but it really does say a lot, I think, when both of you are the face of this conversation of what I think is ultimately going to be a transition for the Republican Party into the future, where I want more people listening to the both of you than somebody with a title and a position, because that's the organic nature of politics in many respects. How do you guys feel about that role? How do you feel about, in some sense, being that new face of a new party that represents all the things that we have laid out as values for who we are as Republicans? It's not even conservative versus anything else. It's just being a damn Republican, right? Because in my experience, I've run into Republicans who are pro-choice and support the Second Amendment, Republicans who are pro-life who don't support the Second Amendment. So tell me what a conservative is. I know it's not that. It's not policy so much as it is philosophy. It is the thing that orients you towards the Constitution, individual liberties, and the freedoms that are granted to us under that Constitution, and conserving those principles, those rights. That's what conservatism is to me, something different for everybody else. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being that generational change for a party that has lost its way. That likely will have a hard time standing up after this election. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's definitely not a role that I sought out. I never thought I'd really be in this position. And
And
there's
I
a part
know,
of
just to say for the record, trust me, folks, Sarah, as much as she was the press secretary, Sarah is not out here saying, "Hey, y'all, party over here."
That's so true. Not at
Sarah
all.
is
No.
not. Sarah's like, "Okay, where's the camera? I'll stand there. How long are we here? I got to go." All right.
Honestly, it is. Because I even was talking about this recently with a friend, and they were like, "What are you going to do after the election if Donald Trump loses?" And I was like, "Honestly, I might just walk away from it all." And I was like, "I'm so disenchanted by it. And if we accomplish that goal, then I will
And
be proud
same
that we did
here.
it." Exactly. And I was like, but then they posed a question to me. They said, "But don't you want to be a part of the effort that rebuilds the Republican Party?" And I was like, "You're making a really good point."
You're
Yep.
like,
Actually, it
damn
was our good friend Tim Miller was the one
Yes.
who posed that question to me. And I was like, "Damn it, Tim. Like, you make a really good point." And he's right, because I do want to be part of that effort, because I want us to return back to those conservative values and principles. And obviously the first step is making sure that Donald Trump is defeated. And so I think that we can get back to that, or I'm hopeful. I haven't lost total faith in it, but obviously it starts with making sure that Donald Trump is out of the picture. And so that's the first goal. But then I'm hopeful that we can have those conversations of moving the party back toward that, because I don't think that MAGA can continue without Donald Trump. I don't think that
Interesting.
anyone could ever take over the helm. Obviously JD Vance is kind of his appointed successor, but I don't think he has the political chops to be able to do it. People have tried to replicate and emulate Donald Trump. We saw it with DeSantis, him trying to kind of be Trump 2.0, Trump without the mean tweets, but I think that I don't think anyone can do it. Trump is a singular figure, and so I do think that once he's defeated, MAGA will go away. Now, will it go away immediately? No. It's going to take a long time to root or rid our party of this cancer. But I do think that it's possible, and I'm hopeful, and I look forward to playing a role in trying to get us back to being a party that I can be proud of, because I can't say that right now.
Before we go to break, Olivia, what are your thoughts for you? Because I know, I have to also, for the record, just say I've watched you make that transition from being in the back room in the skiff in the quiet places of government to a little bit more out front. And I remember you being very nervous and very hesitant at times to have the conversations you were having. And you would call up not to betray any confidences in our conversations, but you would call up and you would say, "Okay, I've got to do this thing tomorrow with this, coming on MSNBC or doing another interview," and wanting to get it right. And you have gotten it right. You have figured out your lane. How has this worked out for you in terms of moving into this space where you now represent a voice inside our party that, like Sarah, young woman, in your case, a woman of color, that has a clarifying voice about not just this moment, but what, to Sarah's point, what this is going to look like after this is over.
Yeah, like I think, I remember those conversations, and a lot of it was also just knowing. I mean, even though I was in the anti community for so long, like I feel like I grew up around the Republican apparatus, right? I mean, I started my career, I interned, I was an Eisenhower intern at the RNC back in the day. Like, I was, talking to Latino Republicans, one of some of the first elected Republicans that were Latino. I was talking to Eliana Ross Lightman. You know what I mean? People like that were the people that I looked up to. And now I'm in this space, and I remember having this conversation with you because I was like, how am I betraying the people that I know are not MAGA? Am I betraying conservatism as a whole? Like, how do you reconcile that with yourself, right? Like, what am I doing here, and how do I navigate this in a way that's not betraying myself as well of who I am as a person? And that can be challenging, right? Because you have a lot of competing voices. It can be a little bit bullying in some ways. And look, I mean, I know Sarah probably gets it, especially for a while. I mean, I got it from I definitely got it from the right, and I got it from the left too.
Right.
Right. I got a lot of hate of like, how could you work there? You created this beast. You
Oh yeah, the
created this
blame game.
Republican
This is all
Party.
our fault. Right.
You worked in the Bush administration. You were a warmonger. You did this. And I gotta be honest with you, it's hard not to take that deeply personal. It was hard because it hurt. Right. And then,
Yeah.
but look, I've had those conversations myself. You know, I've gone back to younger Olivia and being like, all right, I was in Baghdad. Like, where did I enable, did I support, what did I do in
Right,
this role,
right.
right? And I acknowledge that, I own that. But I also think, like, in this space going forward, honestly, I'm watching what is the party going to do? What are these other people who I know do not believe in this and behind closed doors have told all of us that they think this is horrible and they think it's
Right.
bad for the party? Are we going to carve and pave a better path forward? Are we going to go back to traditional tenets? What does that look like now? But I just, you know, I don't know. I think, you know what, like Sarah said, I think we're a ways off. But I do think that there's true conservative philosophies, and like you laid it out, I mean, it's not dead, it's there. It's just, what does it mean? What does it mean going forward? And I look, we need functioning. We need a functioning political party, right? We need a functioning Republican Party.
Yeah, emphasis on functioning.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we want to get into a little bit of what happened the last couple of days with both presidential candidates, and their final message to the country before voting on November 5th. We're having a great conversation with Olivia Troy, Sarah Matthews, the women who stand in the breach. And are offering clarifying voice in this election cycle. More with Olivia and Sarah right after this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Michael Steele here. Now, if you're a fan of this show, you are more than aware that an election is coming up. And if you're paying real close attention, well, you know just how close this presidential race really is. Now, how that's possible, given what we know about these two candidates, well, that's completely beyond me. But given that it's so close, I'd like to introduce you to an app I love called Kalshi. Now, Kalshi is the first legal exchange where you can trade on any event. For the first time in 100 years, they got approval to list markets to trade on the outcome of the upcoming election, making it legal to trade on the election in the U.S. As you'll find out when you go to kalshi.com/steel, Kalshi has hundreds of markets to trade on related to who will win the presidential election, who will control the House or the Senate, who will win even swing states. They also have markets on inflation, interest rates, whether the government will shut down, and a whole lot more. Now, you can trade on your opinions to make money or hedge risks that may impact you. You can also check the market odds, which come from thousands of people trading. Now, these odds can be highly predictive, which is why these markets are referred to as prediction markets. There's been a whole lot of studies on the value of prediction markets, and we found them to be quite useful as we track what's happening in the election. Kalshi is the first regulated place to trade on these types of markets, and I love having them as a sponsor. Now, the election markets are now live to trade. They are the first regulated place where you can actually do this. And you can sign up using my link, kalshi.com/steel, and the first 500 traders who deposit $50 will get $20 credit. That's kalshi.com/steel. Go there today to get that free $20 credit. That's kalshi.com/steel. Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. We're having, hopefully... a good conversation for you. I think it is. I really appreciate the sort of the little bit more intimate nature of the conversation before the break, because I wanted folks to really get a sense of what it's been like for you two women at a time when it has not been easy to be sandwiched in between your party and what was once your former opposition party, if you will, where you would go into battle on policy and principle and you're working the administration to get an agenda done. And now you find yourselves aligned with that Democratic Party on behalf of democracy and going around the country and talking about the future presidency of Kamala Harris and vice presidency of Tim Walz. It is an interesting thing. It's been a little bit frustrating for me. I could not get out there like I could in 2020 because I'm now on MSNBC hosting a show. And so they've got, I think, appropriate restrictions on that kind of political engagement. So I've been living vicariously through both of you and watching you guys work and do what you do and just trying to whisper in ears from time to time about, you know, the importance of this election. And we've reached that point, ladies, where both candidates are offering their closing messages, if you will, to the country. Last night on Tuesday night, there was probably the most profoundly significant moment, I think, in many respects for the campaign, when 75,000 people appeared on the National Mall on the Ellipse to hear that closing argument from Kamala Harris. And it was something really, I think, to really absorb. The night before that, you had Donald Trump at Madison Square Garden offering his closing message to the country. I can't even, there's not even a comparison here. You can't even say that there was a moment of relativity where you could oh wow, juxtapose a view or an opinion or a position and say, now I gotta weigh that before I go. One was a full out, you know, sort of 1930s reminiscent rally around nationalism and hate with ugly jokes about Hispanics, Blacks. It just mind-boggling versus what we saw and witnessed the other, you know, last night with Harris on the Mall. The most disturbing thing during that rally was the siren that was going off on the streets. That was the most disturbing thing in that rally. But I want to play a quick clip and get your thoughts. You have Harris sort of talking about the violence of January 6th, standing in the exact same spot Donald Trump stood on January 6th, 2021. Let's listen to how she framed that.
Look, we know who Donald Trump is. He is the person who stood at this very spot nearly 4 years ago and sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol to overturn the will of the people in a free and fair election. That he knew he lost. Americans died as a result of that attack. 140 law enforcement officers were injured because of that attack. And while Donald Trump sat in the White House watching as the violence unfolded on television, he was told by his staff that the mob wanted to kill his own vice president. And Donald Trump responded with two words, so what? America, that's who Donald Trump is. And that's who is asking you to give him another 4 years in the Oval Office.
America, that's who Donald Trump is. And it is, I think, important to remind Americans what Donald Trump is. How do you think that went for her last night? You, Sarah, were you there as well? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're both there. You're both there last night. So both of your perspectives on that moment.
It was a very surreal feeling because the last time that I was at the Ellipse was January 6th, 2021. And so I haven't been back to that spot since the day that I resigned from the White House. And so just to be there and remembering what a dark speech he gave that day, where he told these people in the crowd to fight like hell or we won't have a country, where he attacked his own vice president and said, well, if Mike Pence does the right thing, we'll win the election. When he knew full and well that he had lost. He had been told by multiple advisors that he had lost, that there was zero evidence of fraud. And then to juxtapose it with the speech that I heard last night from Kamala Harris, it was really striking. And it kind of took a traumatic event and reformed it into a wonderful experience. I got to sit there with Olivia and listen to this speech, and she gave such a hopeful, inspiring speech where she talked about being a president for all Americans, where she talked about wanting to find common ground and common sense solutions. And it just showed me that we can turn the page on Trump if we take this off ramp. And And I thought she did a great job just from a political sense too, of making the case for her candidacy. It's twofold here, because she needs to lay down, this is why Donald Trump is unfit,
right,
and we can't put him back in power. But then also she laid out a plan for the American people and ticked through what she would do. And I thought it was just a great speech on her part. Probably one of the better speeches, if not her best speech, that I've seen her give. And I just think that it was really impactful, that background of knowing what had transpired on these same grounds 4 years ago, and then to have her there. So I found it really powerful.
Yeah, it's Olivia. I'm going to play a what essentially was a pre-buttal by Trump, but I think that's a very important point, that it's, in terms of the speech itself, one of the takeaways from pretty much everybody, even detractors of the vice president, was that was a damn good speech. And as a closing argument, I think it grabbed a lot more attention. But let's go to Madison Square Garden, where at Madison Square Garden, Olivia, Donald Trump had a lot to say after the comedian went on his riff that he now claims, well, I didn't know about a comedian just said, who, I didn't know. Well,
he didn't know him. He didn't know me either. So that's okay.
Exactly. Right. Well, you put his jokes in the teleprompter, so someone had to read that shit. But anyway, we'll play stupid for you. We'll play stupid. But let's play a little bit of stupid right here. Just take a quick listen.
After two assassination attempts in just over 3 months, her lies and her slanders are very shameful and really inexcusable. And I can say that if I were president and somebody was being threatened, openly threatened, like they've threatened me, I would say, if you do that, even if this was an opponent who I disliked, if you do that, we will obliterate your entire country and it would all stop. But they wouldn't make that statement. They won't make that statement.
Yeah, that's rich.
Olivia, help a brother out. I don't know. Well, first off is I've been the victim of two presidential assassinations. I mean, did they give him sleepy pills? I mean, what?
I think he is tired.
I think he is showing his age. He's showing his cognitive lapses. Everything that they have said, you know, the thing about Trump has always been, for me, is about his ability to effectively project. And so all of the projection about Joe Biden and his age is being realized in him. But I'll give you the moment to help clarify what the hell we just heard.
I don't know. Coming from the guy that has an entire enemies list, who is out there, like, basically promising retribution, right? And I actually think that was one of the best and favorite lines of Kamala's speech, was just like, you know, he's got a list of all these enemies and the things he's going to do to his enemies, a revenge list, and I've got a to-do list of what I'm going to do for the country. And I think just listening to that clip there, I mean, it's just how deranged Donald Trump's mind continues to be. And I just, you know, I just...
What was that saying?
I can't even.
I'll add on to that. It's really rich to hear him say the comments that you played, given he has suggested a war tribunal for Liz Cheney.
Right.
He has kind of suggested, I believe it was decapitating General Milley.
Yeah.
If I recall those comments correctly. He has campaigned on retribution and wanting to enact revenge on his political enemies. I mean, even, you know, the enemy from within, he refers to Nancy Pelosi and her husband and Adam Schiff as, and our fellow Americans as well. And so, it makes no sense, those comments that he made, because it goes against everything that he has campaigned on. And that is what my warning has always been to Republicans, of, oh, okay, well, you might have liked, you know, this or that policy in the first term. That's not what a second term is about. You know, we know that it's going to all be about his personal grievances and wielding as much power in order to enact revenge on those he deems as his enemies.
So maybe one or both of you can help explain this.
And actually put us in a lot of danger, to be honest with you. If I didn't have somewhat of a relationship with Russia and Putin and all, we had to have it. And by the way, getting along with President Xi and Putin and Kim Jong-un of North Korea, if you remember when I met with Obama, his wife was very nasty to me the other day. That was not nice. She was very nasty. She said nasty things. I was always very respectful of her, but she got up there, which shows you how nervous they are about what's happening. But she was nasty 2 days ago. She got up and said some bad things she shouldn't have said. They were wrong, too. But we're going to turn our country around.
We're talking about how much he loves. He's talking about how much he loves Putin and these authoritarian assholes, right? So he's talking about that. And then he mentions Obama, and all of a sudden, he's like, now I'm going on a tear on Mrs. Obama. But
I mean, just it shows where his mind is at. Like, he can't keep one coherent thought. And he's never been the most eloquent speaker, but if you look at videos of him in 2016 and compare it to now, it just goes to show the cognitive decline there. But I think that, yeah, the praising of the dictators is so alarming. And, you know, I want a leader who stands with our allies, not bends a knee to our enemies. And that's what it seems like Trump would do in a second term with no guardrails. And then also just to another example of the way he talks about women, you know, calling Michelle Obama a nasty woman. Yes. It just, he does not care about women or earning their votes. Their whole strategy has been doubling down on young men and trying to get them to turn out. And it just another example of why women shouldn't be supporting Donald Trump, because that's the way he talks about them.
Livia?
Yeah, well, and the thing is here, when you're looking at Kamala Harris, when you're looking at Michelle Obama, you're looking at all these people that are calling him out, they're operating on facts. They're just factually talking about who Donald Trump is, because they're quoting him at times. They're showing what he is. They're talking about him. He doesn't hide who he is, right? I mean, that's the thing. He tells us everything he's going to do. That's the one thing. Like, he tells us ahead of time, and then he goes and does it. Or, you know, or he lauds these dictators and then aligns with them. So, and then he has conversations with them ongoing, apparently, from what we've, you know, that's been reported. So, and then I'm thinking about this and I'm hearing him and I'm like, you just held a rally for several hours, the speakers, every person that spoke had some vile, nasty, horrible thing to say. I mean, it was one of the most vile things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
To hear the comments that were coming out of these people's mouths. And like, you know, he can deny the comedian. Well, yeah. Are you going to deny Stephen Miller, who did a lot of policy for you? And he's like, America's only for Americans. I mean, let's think about all the things that came out of these people's mouths throughout the night.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was his closing argument, was basically everyone who is against me sucks. Everyone. I mean, who is anyone that is not, a far right white person sucks, basically, for some of these speakers. That's what they were saying. Right. And I mean, it was just, and it was sort of laying out what does policy look like under another Trump administration? Because we certainly saw the first round of it. Right. I mean, that was horrifying.
We get a little bit. I mean, we get a lot of what the policy will look like from Project 2025, which I don't want people to forget about. It should be pinned to your forehead as you go into the ballot box as well, to think about what the federal government's response to your problems will look like under a second Trump term. But here's the thing I want to get both of you before I let you guys get out of here, because we started a little late and I've held you a little bit longer and I do apologize, but I love talking to both of you. I'm so proud of both of you and so excited for what you represent for a Republican Party that I've been a member of since 1976. And it's important for me to know that generationally there's going to be the two of you on that front line to reimagine a party for your generation. So that's exciting for me. And I'm really, really happy for that. But what I'm still a little bit disturbed by are the bullshitters that are out there. And this week, we've seen one of the biggest and most profoundly pieces of bullshit come from the Washington Post. The Washington Post is a perennial newspaper. It is an important voice in not just the community where I grew up here in Washington, D.C., but globally. And the journalists who work there, from everyone like my friend, our friend Jonathan Capehart, to, you know, Eugene Robinson, and just the grinders, the men and women who are on the beat, they represent a high, high level of journalistic integrity in the framing of, you know, Woodward and Bernstein. And for the owner, because of his Blue Origins interests, his government contracts, his other financial interests that could be impacted by a second Trump term, decided to kill the impending endorsement of Kamala Harris. After 9 years of coverage of Donald Trump, 9 years of calling out the threat that he is, after changing its masthead to read "Democracy Dies in Darkness," and to have the owner of the Washington Post turn out the lights on that democracy by pulling that endorsement, to me, was highly offensive. I wanted to get your thoughts on that in light of the work that you've been out here doing, right? You're out here sweating the details with voters and framing and contextualizing the difference between these two candidates running to be the next president of the United States. And to have the LA Times, the Washington Post, and now I understand USA Today, these major journals of storytelling, relating facts to us, say, you know what, we're just going to take a pass because we don't want to piss Donald Trump off. We don't want him coming after us. Well, let me tell you, bitch, he's coming after you anyway. He just is. Are you that damn stupid after 9 years of watching his ass do what he's done and punk all the political people, all the journalists, everybody anyway? He's coming for you. So you don't have a window which you can just stray and all of a sudden find your voice and say something. You've now effectively shut it down. What are your thoughts? Because I get fired up on this and I try not to be, but anyway.
I will say, I think most of these national outlets, the endorsements aren't going to move sizable amounts of voters. They're not looking to the Washington Post or the New York Times to tell them, but I do think, I think there's so much more, it's so much more important for our local newspapers to make mm-hmm. those endorsements, you know, and people will listen to their local news more right. and that they can make the case for why for their community, you know, a Kamala Harris candidacy would be better, for example. But I found it just really cowardly, just the timing of it all. It was just, you know,
the timing. Yeah.
Because
that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, sure, you know, these endorsements from these national outlets aren't going to maybe move the needle, but it's the timing of it that it just felt very cowardly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was pissed. Yeah. My ass is out here getting death threats every day. My family's been put through the ringer. I'm watching other people be put through the ringer. And out of all the timing, you decided that now was a moment where you're like, hey, we're going to be nonpartisan because we're a newspaper. After you've done all these endorsements for how long?
Right.
For how many years?
But here, but
right they, now.
They endorsed his opponent in 20 and 16.
Yes.
And so I give you 16 and then, you know, okay. But by 2020, you knew who Donald Trump was. You knew the threat that he was. And Jeff Bezos himself was like, in 2016, he was like, yeah, of course we're going to endorse. Why not? This is an important thing for us to do. And in 2024, it's like, you know, well.
Yeah. And the biggest election of our lifetime right now with what we're up against. And that is this is the moment when they decided. And I agree with Sarah. They're cowards.
Yeah.
They're cowards. And these are, look, call it out. These are very wealthy people who are putting their own personal wealth and profits over the greater good of our country. And so, yeah, I'm angry. I'm pissed off at that because I'm like, one, you're giving into him. That's what he wants. And that is how democracy dies, by the way.
Yeah.
Because you're giving in to what fascism and authoritarianism looks like. And that's what they want you to do. And you're right. He's still going to go after them. They publish one thing about him, and you think that they're not on the list? Are you kidding me?
Of course they are. Look, the man is talking about shutting down CNN, MSNBC, you know, the CBS. You don't think the Washington Post is on that list, particularly given how he's already gone after the Washington Post anyway? All right, it just drives me nuts. Sarah Matthews, Olivia Troy, you both have been patient and kind with your time. I am very grateful for the conversation, but more importantly for your leadership, showing a lot of folks the light is this way. Come on, y'all, the light is this way. Let's go. And with the 6 or so days that are left in this campaign, just really be safe, be well. I know you both are out there on the ground across the country, getting folks engaged, getting them to vote and to exercise the franchise that's been given to them by founders and not wasting it. And so thank you for that. We will definitely be praying for good things on next Tuesday, but we also know it may take a little while. So folks, just chill your jets. Don't get stupid. Don't be an asshole about, oh, I don't know who's winning the election. You know, it takes time. You know, Florida will get theirs in very quickly. Pennsylvania may not. You know, Arizona may not. California, God bless California. It could be weeks, but still, right? There is a process. Our ballot boxes are secure. And the SOBs who are trying to set ballot box drop boxes on fire, your ass is on a lot of lists. So just know we see you. But folks, get out and vote. Don't be intimidated. Don't let those 200,000 poll watchers, quotation marks, of the RNC intimidate you. If any of those mofos get up in your face, don't get ugly. Don't get mad. Just raise your hand and get an election official or local authorities to tell those sons of bitches to step back. Don't get out of your line. You stay in your line. You cast your vote because they don't want you voting. So take it seriously. I got my vote t-shirt on. Sarah's got her red, white, and blue flag on. I'm loving it. There we go, America. There we go. And Olivia Troy, because she's clandestine backroom quiet stuff. She's, you know, she's not showing the bling, y'all.
The gnome is listening. The gnome is currently conducting surveillance.
So I thank you both. I love you guys. I really do. Really appreciate both of you for coming on the podcast and spending some time. Folks, that does it for now. You've heard my little spiel. Vote. That's all. That's the message. Vote. I'm not playing around with you. And seriously, if you don't vote, just stop listening because I don't really, you won't be interested in what I have to say to you afterwards. Now, my producer's probably going to hit me aside and say, don't tell people stuff. Y'all know what I mean. Come on, stop it. Y'all grown ass people, get out and vote. If you're over 18, do your civic duty and engage. And because you're going to be bitching about shit next year. And whether it's Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, you're going to be bitching. And the only way you get to do that is if you voted. So let's get in the game the right way. When we next meet, we will have a new president-elect. Y'all, don't y'all mess this up, okay? That's all I'm saying. Don't y'all mess this up. God bless y'all. Take care. Till next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.